coming up.
Hey, hey, hey. Oh, oh, oh. Whoa. We are all one people and we have to reunite. I say better gather up our warriors, cause tonight is the big fight. Hey, 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 hey.
It's 9 o'clock. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listeners' support and support from Portland Saturday Market. 45 years of handmade arts and crafts, freshly prepared international foods, and local music in downtown Portland, featuring live music and kids' corner events. Portland Saturday Market, every Saturday and Sunday in Waterfront Park, now through Christmas Eve. Event schedule, vendor information, and more online at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. This is KBOO Portland. Press Watch is next. Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Pear talks about life, death, and insanity on planet Earth. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, we hear from two of the contributors to Writing for Animals, New Perspectives for Writers and Instructors to Educate and Inspire. At 11, Black Book Talk asks guests and listeners what you're reading. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to donate or to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. It's 9:01. Press Watch is next.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Palestinian Film Festival, October 5th to the 7th, at the Fifth Avenue Cinema in downtown Portland. From Friday evening to Sunday afternoon, the theater will feature films by and about Palestinians and the Israeli occupation.
The Stones Cry Out, a film about Palestinian Christians, will play on Friday, October 5th. Then, The Wanted 18, about the nonviolent struggle in Beit Sahur, and the herd of 18 cows that Israel deemed a national security threat.
The Occupation of the American Mind, Steadfast Hope, and more.
You can find a link to tickets for the event on kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Joining me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I was very proud of the KBOO evening news coverage of the police shooting this past week. And by contrast, I want to present some of the coverage I saw. It's actually by Maxine Bernstein of the Oregonian. Her article starts off saying, two Portland police officers pulled up to a shootout in downtown after hearing gunfire early Sunday, saw muzzle flashes and fired multiple times at a man who they say turned towards them holding a gun in a parking lot, according to new details obtained Monday by the Oregon and Oregon Live, Oregonian that is. Police shot Patrick K. Kimmons, 27, and he was pronounced dead at OHSU Hospital. It's not clear how many times Kimmons was shot. His family has claimed he was hit 12 to 15 times in the back, but police sources say the two officers fired less than 10 times. Central Precinct Sergeant Gary Britt, with the Bureau 10 years, and Officer Jeffrey Livingston, with the Bureau 1.5 years, are on paid administrative leave as the police continue to investigate the shooting. The case will be presented to a Multnomah County Grand Jury for review. And it continues, police suspect two other men were wounded at the scene before the officers arrived. The men were taken by private vehicles to Legacy Emmanuel Medical Center a short time later. This is not congruent with the story that I picked up, or it has been arranged to be somewhat congruent with the story that I got when I went down and checked out the scene. Uh, when I went, pardon me, when I went and checked out the scene Sunday, hours after the shooting, and I talked to Constance White, known as Mama Connie, and if I can address the engineer directly, I have some audio queued up, okay, and I want to present this because the way this was covered, especially the first couple of days, it was entirely what the police had to say, but this information that I'm about to play was immediately available, and so I'm doing this to criticize the press. I'm doing this to criticize the Oregonian for their habits, knowing, as they surely do, that the police are given 48 hours, not by arrangement anymore officially with the union contract, but now due to the largesse, if that's what it is, of the prosecutor. They are given a couple of days to get their story together, and it seems to me that they are getting their story together. So if we could play that audio, this is from Sunday morning, several hours after the shooting. What's your name?
My name is Constance White.
And what do you know about the situation here?
I went to get a burrito and passed. It was two police cars in the parking lot.
This is last night?
Yes. Gunfire went off. Why it take them to turn around to give back 12 shots and kill a man?
So there was gunfire before they turned around?
Yes. Okay. And they were sitting in the parking lot where it went down. I seen life go out of people.
So you were there and you actually witnessed this event?
I went and got a burrito right there on 3rd and Stark. Right there. I just cleared the parking lot to get the burrito. Across the street, okay? Like the kitty corner from where the officer's car is right there. It was two, just like that, pointing this way.
So over there by Cameron's books?
Mm-hmm, right here, in between the end of the store and the new hotel.
Do you know about what time of night that was?
I'll say maybe 3, because my nephew went up and got a last beer at 2:30 up the street.
Okay.
So it had to be about 3 o'clock.
I'm sorry to press you on this. I can see that it's costing you.
It was family. I didn't even know until now. I mean, I'm telling you what I saw with my own naked eyes. Can't take no more.
Do you think it's worse?
It is worse. Because the thing is, they're not killing kids that they don't know. They're killing kids that, like these babies you see out here that went to the children's club on MLK for the kids to go to after school. These are kids that are in the community that they have watched grow. That they're killing. That is knocking them out. I said, this is worse when I was a little girl growing up here, knowing that this was one of the Ku Klux Klan's headquarters, but my mom told me don't hate. If you're going to hate someone, hate them because they did something to you. Don't hate just because of the color of their skin. Right now, I'm green and you're purple. It don't matter. But they are not accountable for what they do. They're justified and get paid. They were in the parking lot. Why take 12 bullets to put somebody down and wound two others? When it could have been more. Because, I mean, a Saturday night, it's busy as hell. You know, the clubs is closing, you know, people walking all around. That parking lot was full of cars.
Is it true, do you know, that the young man was shot in the back?
Yes.
So they're making sure of him, basically, 12 bullets shooting in the back.
It don't take 12 bullets to put one down. It was like just a straight out, as far as I'm concerned, a straight out killing. Because they were in the lot already. Fire went off already. Why it takes after, take 12.
There's been international intervention because the Israelis have been sniping down Palestinians. Do you think we need international intervention here?
Yes. I'm 63 years old. I've seen too much children. They grew up just like me. It could have been me because I passed the gunfire. And stood on the corner and watched to see life going on. But man, to find out earlier today when I come outside that it's a family member. It's crazy. And I told my daughter, it's too close. It's too close. My nephew, then his uncle at Mary's, a week later. If we want to take it back at least 20 years, my brother was shot by the police in the back in front of his grandmother's house.
Again in the back?
Yes. No justification.
So, again, I'm presenting that by way of contrast. I think KBOO News did that right. I like the way it was arranged by Kyle, news producer, this past Monday, and that was followed by a live report from Jenka. So I think we did the right thing as community radio. I would also invite you to contrast this situation. I don't know how many shots were fired, of course. Gunshots notoriously echo downtown. So it's hard to say for anyone, I think, exactly. But contrast this. As best I can tell, this person was shot in the back, just going by eyewitness testimony. And compare it to the treatment of Jeremy Christian, the person who had just, when he had just killed two people on the Max purely out of racial hatred and was still armed and was approached by the police and allowed to finish his drink before being taken in, and compare it to the treatment of Dylan Roof, who was peaceably taken in after engaging in intentional hate-based genocidal slaughter. My fellow white people, here is something that you can do right now to address the slaughter of black men by police. First, answer your jury summons. You may want to read up on jury nullification. But the reason I'm bringing it up is there's a grand jury coming up. A grand jury will address this shooting. Now, grand juries are supposed to determine whether something needs to go to trial. In the United States, when a policeman is brought to a grand jury, that's not its function. The prosecutor, in close collaboration with the police department and the police union, will, as they always do, get people together and stage a little show in which they show in as many ways as they possibly can that the police officer should not be charged, that there should be no trial for the shooting. So answer your jury summons, because you might be able to get on a grand jury if you have already answered summons. Get on the grand jury if you get a chance. Understand the prosecutor and the police department will take you aside and make a deliberate effort to induce a variety of Stockholm syndrome in you. They'll make you feel like your only choice is to absolve your good friend there, the police officer. Resist this. Remember that your only job, really, is to make sure that it goes to trial. If you're concerned about the cop being innocent, then let the jury decide that in a real trial. If that's where the facts lead, don't take it on yourself to absolve the men in a psychologically compromised grand jury proceeding. Be aware, this is what is going to happen. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. In an article from NSCAG.org, this is suggested by Brian Wilson, who you may be familiar with as a longtime activist, someone who lost his legs protesting the movement of bombs to attack the Third World, movement of a nuke train, if I remember correctly. In its latest attempt to demonize Nicaragua, they write, Amnesty International once again nails its colors to the mast of the right-wing opposition. Its latest urgent action campaign denouncing the wave of detentions of students and activists in Nicaragua is yet more proof that Amnesty has given up all pretense to be an impartial source of information about human rights in Nicaragua. Its report completely ignores the fact that those detained are not victims, but the perpetrators of violent crimes. In addition to kidnapping, torture, and murder, those who have been arrested are accused of sexual assault, looting, theft, and the burning and destruction of public and private buildings, including municipal offices, health centers, historical places, private homes, schools and even preschools, universities, police stations, and public and private transport units. Amnesty fails to mention any of this, preferring instead to stick to the myth that students and peaceful protesters have been criminalized. They fail to mention the murder of Nicaraguan citizens including 22 police officers, one of whom was tortured and his body burned on a public road. They failed to mention the murder of Sandinistas such as Lenin Mendiola, who died as a result of gunshots fired directly from an opposition march in Matagalpa on the 11th of August of this year. They failed to mention the kidnapping, torture, and murder of Bismarck Martinez Sanchez, another prominent Sandinista. As the perpetrators of crimes such as these who have been arrested, these are the people being called political prisoners by Amnesty International. And you can read more on that at nscag.org, and they have a picture of Coppin Zamora talking to her folks in the Nicaraguan lockup, which isn't at all like the American. Radio Havana, Cuba. NATO is planning to conduct its biggest military exercise since the Cold War, drawing as much as 45,000 troops in Norway. That's according to Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. Speaking at the NATO headquarters in Brussels on Tuesday, the Secretary General said in a statement that the maneuver seeks to practice defense operations against a fictional enemy, adding that all members of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, including Russia, have been invited to send observers. The war games, named Trident Juncture 18, will assemble troops from 31 NATO allies and partners along with 50 aircraft, 70 vessels, and around 10,000 land vehicles in a two-month-long exercise focused primarily in central and eastern Norway, aiming to train troops of the NATO Response Force and improve joint force cooperation, according to a Norwegian Armed Forces statement. And what the article does not say is that this is billions of dollars of expenditure. And it is intended, although Russia is invited, it is intended to intimidate Russia. Changing topics, we have an election coming up in November. And there are problems with this election, nationwide and possibly locally. So I want to talk about that. I also want to go over as much of the the measures, the initiative measures, as I can. Kim Zetter on Vice Motherboard wrote earlier this year, the nation's top voting machine maker has admitted in a letter to a federal lawmaker that the company installed remote access software on an election management system it sold over a period of 6 years, raising questions about the security of those systems and the integrity of the elections that were conducted with them. In a letter sent to Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, in April, and obtained by a motherboard, Election Systems and Software acknowledged, that's ESNS, acknowledged that it had provided PC Anywhere remote connection software to a small number of customers between 2000 and 2006, which was installed on the election management system ESNS sold them. The statement contradicts what the company told that reporter and fact checkers for a story written for New York Times in February. Article goes on to point out, speaking for myself now, PC Anywhere allows full remote access to the voting machine's files, and it had its source code stolen in 2006. So do you remember how furious and confused Karl Rove was when Ohio came in for Obama? Think this might be relevant? Let's skip on to this past week's Wall Street Journal article by Robert McMillan and Dustin Volz. Election machines used in more than half of U.S. states carry a flaw disclosed more than a decade ago that makes them vulnerable to cyber attack. The issue was found in the widely used Model 650 high-speed ballot counting machine made by Election Systems and Software, that's ESNS, the nation's leading manufacturer of election equipment. It is one of about seven security problems in several models of voting equipment described in the report, which is based on research conducted last month at the DEF CON Hacker Conference. The flaw in the ESNS machine stood out because it was detailed in a security report commissioned by Ohio's Secretary of State in 2007. Harry Hursty, an election security researcher, said there's been more than plenty of time to fix it. So there's more on that article. I'm going to have to skip ahead. To leverage the 11-year-old flaw, they write, hackers need to save malicious files on a storage drive that is then plugged into a machine. Mr. Hersey said he believes that because the removable devices used by these machines are no longer manufactured and commonly bought on sites such as eBay, it is possible for a hacker to sell an infected disk. Model 650 vote counts could also be modified remotely via a networking bug, the report says. Over the years, speaking for myself just from memory, I can add to the ways described by these articles. Machine supposedly disconnected from the internet, whose Wi-Fi and phone cords are disconnected, can still be hacked via the methods described, but also via digitized audio pulses and via infrared signals picked up by the sensors on the machine. In short, electronic voting machines are proven utterly hackable, unreliable, and that, of course, is why they are wildly popular with incumbent politicians. It's a guaranteed market. Now I want to talk about local elections. I want to make a sharp break here because I'm not accusing local elections of this particular difficulty. I don't actually know, but I'm, you know, anyway. I've written a letter to the Multnomah County director. It reads, "Dear Director Tim Scott, please identify the person or persons who will be verifying signatures in the upcoming election. I would also like a copy of the protocols that will be used to accept or reject signatures. The November ballot measures are particularly sensitive to signature rejections since, as you know, the Multnomah County electorate is often the arbiter in close Oregon votes. I have been asking about the signature rejection process for years now. It is very clear from recent history that thousands of ballots with genuine signatures have been rejected. The result is a special election bonus for the powerful in our society, and I think you will agree that no one should have to routinely track their legitimate delivered ballot to see if it was in fact counted, and then travel to the Elections Bureau to re-vote. I will anticipate your reply with great interest. Signed, Teresa Mitchell, Interim News Director, yada yada." Time is 9:20. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I want to talk about the ballot measures coming up in the November election. Measure 102 is pretty straightforward, so I'm just going to quote Ballotpedia. Measure 102 would amend the state constitution to allow counties, cities, and towns to, with voter approval and certain restrictions, use bond revenue to fund the construction of affordable housing without necessarily retaining complete ownership of the constructed housing. Measure 102 would require that these affordable housing bonds be approved by local voters and that the total principal of any, it goes into some detail. I'll skip ahead. Measure 102 was advocated for by the Portland City Hall. And basically, this is so that they can mix local and state and national funds to provide housing, probably a good thing. So there you have it. Houselessness is a national issue brought on by the laissez-faire hyper-capitalism that has been implemented by billionaires and their stooges since the Reagan Revolution 38 years ago. This at least will allow some national funds to be used to address it. Think of it in the frame of the revelations that Donald Trump is, as everyone suspected, the scion of a racist, money-laundering megalomaniac who has never departed from his father's path of using wealth and privilege to acquire and accumulate more wealth and privilege. Think of it in terms of Jeff Bezos and his legacy of sprains, hyperextensions, bruises, arthritic flares, and exhaustion, the juice of grossly underpaid misery that his gigantic internet machine sucks up into his wallet. Keep thinking about that as I talk about Measure 103, and no, I don't care that he raised the minimum to $15. It ain't enough. Just a prohibition on grocery taxes here on Measure 103. Ain't nobody here but us chickens. Measure 103 has the appearance of an innocuous populist prohibition. Just don't tax our groceries, thank you. But, of course, that is not what it is. There is no threat of a tax on groceries in Oregon, any more than there is a threat of a tax on windows size. It isn't happening. It isn't going to happen. So why is the sudden appearance of a ban on the possibility of a tax happening? And why are very large out-of-state grocery companies paying millions for the promotion of the measure? After all, Albertsons, Safeway, and Kroger, which own Fred Meyer, won't be hurt by a grocery tax. You have to pay it, not them. You have to buy groceries anyway, and the extra money they get goes into their substantial bank accounts and earns interest money for them until they pay it at the end of the year, so why should they care? Have they suddenly taken to the best interests of the little person to heart? Is Measure 103 the beginning of a new wave of compassionate capitalists? Of course not. Measure 103 says, quote, prohibits state and local governments from adopting, approving, or enacting on or after October 1st, 2017, any tax fee or other assessment on sale, distribution, purchase, receipt of, or for privilege of selling, distributing groceries by individuals, entities regulated by designated food safety agencies, including restaurants or operating as farm stand, farmer's market, food bank. Measure prohibits sales tax, gross receipts tax, commercial activity tax, value-added tax, excise tax, privilege tax, and any other similar tax on the sale of groceries, end quote. Now, doesn't that sound nice? You wouldn't want to tax poor old food bank, would you? Or a nice farmer's market, and where's the gotcha? There's a gotcha. The gotcha is in the word distribution. Jeff Bezos and Amazon, remember them, are muscling into the grocery business in Oregon via Whole Foods. And so, of course, Kroger and Safeway have to follow suit or die. And they plan to expand their distribution, Amazon-style distribution of groceries using shortbed trucks, Uber drivers, bicyclists, automated carts, driverless cars, FedEx, U.S. Mail, UPS, everything and anything automatically delivered via artificial intelligence. Alexa, in your kitchen, literally in your refrigerator, and up your wazoo to distribution. Remember that word, distribution networks that will employ many of us. In the very near future, at desperation wages and insane speed, and they don't want to take a chance on the city councils and legislatures looking at all that road usage and utility usage and infrastructure usage and wage slave usage and deciding that big businesses should pay their fair share. So here they come with millions of dollars in campaign contributions and a big friendly smile. And they want you to vote in Measure 103, a lockout on properly funded infrastructure and regulation. Suckers. Measure 104 is in much the same vein. The Oregon Association of Realtors wants you to agree to put taxation out of reach, just in case you notice that the houselessness that has made life in this nation a torment is being driven in large part by grossly inflated house prices. They like those profits, and no, they don't want to share. There was an effort just a year or so past to limit the state mortgage deduction for persons making more than $100,000 a year each or $200,000 in the household. Oh, horror. Approving Measure 104 keeps Oregon on the path of gross maldistribution of wealth. A fair mortgage tax wouldn't touch 90% of the population, but guess who has the power and the money to fund nice little loopholes for themselves? And make it look like it's your special thing instead of theirs. So that's Measure 104. I'm saying no. Measure 105, at least, isn't successfully hiding. It's a straight-up racist shot across the bow. Think about cops like the Nazi-worshipping, Nazi-uniform-wearing Mark Kruger, who is, yes indeed, still employed as a trainer in the Portland Police Department, and ask yourself if maybe approving Measure 105 and allowing all the local cops to enforce all the immigration rules might result in a God almighty terror. Here's an extended quote from Oregon United, what a no vote on Measure 105 means. Measure 105 would throw out Oregon's existing sanctuary law. This law passed with broad support from Republicans and Democrats and has been protecting Oregonians from unfair racial profiling for more than 30 years. A no vote on Measure 105 will keep the law in place, they write, ensuring that local police personnel, funds, equipment, and facilities are not used to pursue and detain people based solely on suspicions about their immigration status. In other words, speaking for myself, no chasing brown people. Doesn't seem to have stopped that, but it takes away an excuse. Oregonians cannot be stopped, they write, detained or interrogated just because someone thinks they might be an undocumented immigrant. Local police can continue to hold people accountable, including both immigrants and non-immigrants, if they commit crimes and harm our community. There's more to that. You can find it. And speaking of blatant and obvious, that brings us to Measure 106, which would defund abortions in the state of Oregon to any and every woman who doesn't find herself flush with ready thousands of dollars in cash as she considers terminating an unwanted pregnancy. The promoters of this measure must be hoping that woman-controlling Jesus is going to cause a special and specific earthquake or a plague of liberal voting-attacking locusts who are going to buzz right up the noses of the overwhelming majority who are otherwise going to slap this piece of dogma shift down. Well, you've been listening to Press Watch. Thank you. And coming up on KBOO, you're about to listen to Per Fogering, who has Fight the Empire. And I think you'll want to stay tuned for that. Press Watch on KBOO is available on 90.7 FM from our great big Eiffel Tower transmitter on the West Hills and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea. Thank you.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. Well, the other, last week, Donald Trump took his stand-up routine to the UN, and it got him some derisive laughter. But like that other comedian, Rodney Dangerfield, he didn't get much respect. And so that leads me to wonder, the world can laugh at Donald Trump, but can it deal with all his bullying and the sanctions and all that kind of stuff? Right now, Trump and John Bolton and Mike Pompeo are really going after Iran. They've immediately after Trump was elected, he pulled out of the nuclear agreement with Iran.